Good morning. My name is Celeste, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Quarterly Analyst Relations Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Golderman, you may begin your conference.
All right, Celeste, thank you very much. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's Gartner Quarterly Analyst Relations call. As our lead for the analyst relations community, I look forward to meeting with each of you during the course of not only these ATCs, our upcoming forums, which we'll talk about, the one-on-ones at Gartner conferences, as well as our conversations and interviews that we've been having over the phone. While I have this very sincere pleasure of hosting today's call, there's a team of very dedicated Gartner associates, as well as folks outside, our guest speakers that you'll hear from today, that really put a lot of great effort into today's call to make this very successful and valuable for you. So you'll get to hear from a few of them today. To begin our call, each of you should have received an email from us this morning with a set of charts that we'll reference during the next hour. If you have not or need anything else from Gartner during the call, you can contact us at arcommunity@gartner.com. And we have folks manning that that mailbox to perhaps send out a deck if you haven't received that or help you with anything else that you need. So we've got an ambitious agenda for today's call. So in the interest of time, what we'll do is to dispense with an overall agenda overview up front in lieu of introducing each of our individual presenters as we go through the agenda. So over the last several months and since our last call back in June, we've been speaking with many of you about topics and issues of interest to you, and we want to thank those of you who have helped to shape today's agenda, as well as those that have given us some really valuable input for the upcoming AR Forum in Orlando and Cannes, which we'll actually discuss at the wrap-up. And I personally look forward to speaking with each of you that I haven't had a chance to meet with during the coming months. One of the most important issues that all of you have raised, or many of you have raised, is questions around our research process in Magic Quadrants and other methodologies, especially where customer reference checking was a part of the process. So here to introduce our first speaker and convey Gartner's approach and philosophy with regards to customer reference checking is Jenny Lehman, Gartner's Group Vice President of Research Operations.
Thanks, Jeff, and good morning to everyone. Thanks for joining us. As the GVP of Research Operations here at Gartner, one of the things I'm responsible for is research methodology, and so the processes and practices around how we do our research. So as you can imagine, I get many questions, lots of interest and focus on Magic Quadrants and the process associated with Magic Quadrants. And as Jeff said, many times the questions that we're getting from the participating vendors have to do with the references. Now, out at the AR Forum, we will be talking more generally about Magic Quadrants, and we're going to have a best practices panel, and we really invite you to be there to participate in that. But we won't be covering the basics. We won't be covering, what a Magic Quadrant is, how we do all the steps of the Magic Quadrant. So we just want to remind you that we have methodologies on Gartner.com. That whole section, there's information about Magic Quadrants and market scopes and the specific process that we use. In the presentation today, there's a link to an FAQ document around Magic Quadrants and reference checking. And so you might, if you're newer to the process, maybe you haven't been involved in a Magic Quadrant in the past, you anticipate that you might be in the future, you might want to check those things out before you get to the forum so that you can pick up quickly on the information that's being shared by our guest AR professionals. But today what I wanted to do is just spend a few minutes talking about reference checks because, as Jeff said, this comes up a lot. a lot of questions about reference checks, how we use them, and what our policies are around reference checks. Let me just say that one of the things that we really try to stress with all of our analysts who are using references is that this is a really important thing for you as vendors. This is an important part of your relationship with your clients. We know that it takes a lot of energy and effort on your part to establish and maintain those relationships, that you put a lot of your time and effort into that, and that every time you use a reference, you've used up a little bit of that goodwill. You know, you've kind of played that card a little bit, and so you have to be very cautious. You can't just give out references nilly-willy. You only want to use them where you get the most value out of them, and certainly one of the areas that you get value out of them is in your interactions with the analyst community. But we also understand that the real purpose of you developing those references is to help you grow the business. And so we want to be mindful of that when we ask you for references. And that's the message we try to convey on to analysts when they're using references. Keep in mind that reference checking is something that is ongoing and continuous. So analysts don't wait for an event to check references. Analysts are checking references every time they talk to anyone who has anything to do with your products or services. So every time that they're at a major event and they're doing one-on-one sessions with people who are likely not even Gartner clients, when Gartner clients, we hear from them during our inquiry processes, information that we read in the press. This is a continuous process for us, so please try not to think of, oh my gosh, they only ask for two references and, you know, whatever, that we're not talking to enough people. Understand that this is a really important part of our research process, and so we have many, many sources. But when it comes down to a major piece of research, such as a Magic Quadrant, frequently an analyst will solicit input about and ask you for references. Usually they're going to ask you for something very specific, and that's to fill in the gaps for things that they might feel that they haven't covered in the work that they've done throughout the year. So they're likely to ask you for a reference that is specific to an industry or a region or a size of company or a model of implementation. So that's usually what they're doing when they are asking for references. They're trying to fill in those gaps, making sure that they have all the bases covered. Now, the number of references that they ask you for and the type are going to vary, and it's going to vary by many different factors. So if you are in, as some of you are, 63 different Magic Quadrants and Market Scopes, you're going to find your experience with references for each of those projects are going to be very different and what they're asking for. And so, you know, be aware of that, and talk to the analyst about why they're asking for the references, what they're looking for, what they specifically need, and how they're specifically going to use the references, knowing that it's going to be a different experience based on the market. It's going to have to do with the complexity of the market, the rate of change in the market, the number of clients who are actually live, the changes that have happened since the last time we've done a Magic Quadrant. It's got lots of different variances on what an analyst might need from those references. Now, another question that we frequently get is how much impact does a reference have on our analysis? And the answer to that is, wow, there is no real answer to that. It's going to vary by the market. In a market that is very mature, the analysts know the space well, they have lots and lots of contacts in that market, the references themselves might not have that much impact. It's an ongoing market that we've been covering. We've had lots of continuous impact. You know, speaking to 3 to 5 plus new references probably will have very little impact on our analysis. We don't expect to find a lot of new news there anyways. In other markets, it may have a huge impact. If this is a market that is changing quickly, it's an emerging market, there are very few customers live, the experience of customers that go live is very different, those references are going to have a huge impact on how we do our analysis and how we position vendors within the marketplace. So again, there's no answer to how much it impacts the outcome. Again, this is something that you want to talk to the analyst about and ask them, you know, where are you at on this and how much is this going to influence your analysis of the space, because there is no one stock answer to that. Now, a little bit about our policy, just so that you know what we expect in terms of what an analyst would go through when they're asking for a reference is, first of all, is that you would traditionally see an analyst ask for about 3 to 5 references for any specific project. That doesn't mean that they're not going to ask for more, doesn't mean they're not going to ask for less, but that's our idea of about what would typically be used. If an analyst is asking for many more than that, it probably means the market is very different. We have a couple markets where we ask for 20 plus references. And that's because the analysts are actually doing interviews and almost what we would refer to as primary research to complete that research project. So this is not a typical reference check. They're literally going out and interviewing an extensive number of people. They spend sometimes 30 to 45 minutes with these clients of yours on the phone. And so this goes beyond a traditional reference check. It's almost like, again, primary research. And when they do that much effort, they use that information extensively in other pieces of research, not just a magic quadrant. The other policy that we have is that when an analyst asks for references, they should be specifically about how they're going to use them, how many they're going to contact, and if they're not going to contact them, they should let you know that. So, like, it's perfectly fine for an analyst to say, you know what, I need the list of 10 of your clients, but I'm not going to talk to them. I just need to see a client list. I need to know who's live so I have a sense of the size of the companies, the industries, those types of things, as opposed to, you know, saying I need 5 references and I'm going to call until I can contact 3. Versus I need 3 to 5 references and I'm going to contact them by email and they will be have until X date to get back to me with that information. So again, it's a wide range, but our policy is that the analyst you're working with should be able to share with you how they intend to use those references and share that information for you. And that if we say that we're going to contact references directly and we're not able to contact them, we never get through to them, as a courtesy, we should let you know that that doesn't happen. And unfortunately, I'm aware that you don't always get that information, but our policy is that as a courtesy, we should be getting back to you. So it's perfectly fine for you to request that from the analyst. You know, it's perfectly fine for you to say, could you please let us know who you don't contact or who you haven't reached out to so that you can follow up with those references who were willing to talk to us and didn't need to. And then the final thing I'd like to say is that in no cases do we ever ask or allow the vendors to participate in those calls and to listen to those calls. So those are just a quick overview of what we expect in terms of reference checks. Just a few best practices before I'm going to hand it back to Jeff. The first thing is anticipate the request. You know, sometimes we hear, wow, they only gave us 2 weeks to come up with 5 references, and that's not enough time. First of all, you know, we know that you're working your reference list at all times. So you know a magic quadrant, you know a major piece of research is coming up. Start anticipating what that request is going to look like and even go ahead and discuss it with the analyst earlier rather than later so that you don't find yourself caught off guard and a little short of time and have a difficult time reaching out to those references, those precious references of yours. And then the next best practice is talk to the analyst about how they're going to use those references so that your expectations are set correctly and that you can convey those same expectations onto those references that you're sharing with us. So I hope this little bit of information about reference checks has been valuable for you. As I said, we're going to drill into more best practices around magic quadrants and have panelists from your group of peers two plus AR professionals will be on that panel and be talking about how they manage their best practices around the magic quadrant process, including some reference work that they do. I think we have some additional information for you today, so Jeff, let me hand it back to you.
Great. Thanks, Jenny. Great job. and I'm sure you'll help out with some answers to some of the questions when we get to the Q&A a portion of today's session as well. So one of the things that we've heard from our AR community is sharing best practices. You know, so we've combined that request from many of you with our topic here for discussion, and have invited John Tashik, Salesforce.com's Vice President of Market Strategy. You know, John is actually dialing in, as well as Michael Moozes from our CRM Summit. So we really want to thank, you know, both John and Michael for taking time out of their very, very busy schedules today to share their perspectives with us on this call. So, John, I'll pass the microphone over to you.
Thanks very much, Jeff and Jenny. Well, I'm John Tashik. As Jeff mentioned, I run the Market Strategy Group at Salesforce.com. And just a little bit about the team that I do and how it fits into the analyst world and also with references. So the Market Strategy team and every organization is going to be a little different. But our team encompasses competitive intelligence, analyst relations, the market strategy, and also product strategy. And references are a core part of our team's philosophy, and it's a number one priority for us to maintain good relationships with the references. So I want to go first a little bit about the philosophy Salesforce.com has with references in general, and then I can drill down a little bit into, you know, how we handle specific requests for references, like for the Magic Quadrant and other analyst requests. So the main part that I want to stress is that references as a number one priority are a critical part of how we deal with customers. And it doesn't start with a request. The references are built over time. And we encourage every single customer that signs up for Salesforce.com in any product area to be a reference. And the main reason for that is references drive a lot of our leads, for example, and we want them all to be happy. We want them to be our external spokespeople. So whenever they do go to an event and they're encountered by an analyst or another customer, that they are a reference. And the way to do that is, first of all, is basically to keep them happy and as much as possible, and also just to keep engaged with them over time. So if the customer's been a customer for 5 years, we want them to we engage with them frequently. It could be daily in order for them to be spokespeople, for example, for our company. And we want them to do it in a way that's not, you know, of course we'd love it for them to be glowing references at all times, but we want them to be objective, so because it adds credibility. And the way that Salesforce is set up is that the relationships with the customers spans every single department and of Salesforce.com. So our team has a critical need to have references, obviously, for analyst requests, you know, especially for the Magic Quadrant. But we also maintain relationships with the customers in different groups, marketing, product, and executives. So it spans all across them. And it's part of our company culture so that these relationships are established and happy, because it's a world, you know, that everyone knows is changing, that, you know, a customer can say anything at any time on any type of site. They could go to an event and they can talk. They can blog. Individuals at a company can blog, can Twitter, can do any kind of collaborative communication about the relationship they have with the company. And, you know, most people have, you know, most competitors have alerts set up to see what people are saying about certain companies, and they use that for competitive intelligence. So we, you know, we have to listen to what these the customers say, and hopefully we listen to them before they, you know, get you know, to a stage where they are blogging or Twittering on something that shouldn't have happened in the first place. For example, they're not happy with some facet of their customer experience. So we listen very well, and not only does our team listen, the reference team listens, the executives listen, and in our email culture, this information is passed all around the company, and then it's also, of course, tracked in our product, so that anybody can see it. Anybody who's new at the company can see that what a customer is thinking at any time and what individuals are thinking at a certain time. So our philosophy is definitely references are our number one priority. As a company that's software as a service, references are also the type of people and the type of companies that are lead to renewals. So that's just our general philosophy. And, you know, keeping that in mind, we've developed what we call our practices, our best practices. And it starts with the executive relationship with the customer. And by that, I mean it's so the customers have when they engage with Salesforce.com, they have a relationship with an account executive. But that account executive passes that information to the executives. The executives have communication with the customer, and we need to build and evolve that relationship. And so it's a focus. It's actually written down in every employee's objectives to have good relationships with customers, and we call that success. So it's a success pattern or kind of a platform for building more success with the customers. The second thing is that we don't treat references as a commodity or even a special thing. It's frequent communication is definitely necessary for us to have these references built, and we pool the references. So we have metrics all built across the board on the references. To make sure that they're happy, first of all. But then we communicate with them frequently, and it does not have to be an executive. It could be anybody at our company talking to the references at any time. And so this reference pool gets very, very large. We don't keep it to 10 or 15 or 20 references, and we cherry pick for specific things. It's actually we want every company that we could possibly talk to become a reference, because when push comes to shove, if a reference is needed, there may be a time where somebody's on vacation who could be the reference. So we want to go down the line, and we want them all to be equally good references. Then I mentioned metrics. So in the metrics, we use our system, and we've built it on our platform to measure the success of a customer, and obviously there's going to be some customers that are more successful than others. We hope every customer is extremely happy, but obviously that can't happen. And if you start breaking them, tiering them, there's going to be customers who are less satisfied with our product or service or experience with Salesforce.com than others. So we put metrics in there. And the way we put metrics in there is many-fold. The first one is we have a system that tracks, success with different aspects of a company, the services team, the individuals, everything, the product, individual parts of the product, and so on. And there are subjective ratings that we put in as customers that we talk to them, so that we can build up and boil up into a pool of outstanding references. The second thing is that we integrate survey data into this system that tracks the metrics, and we use customer sat, and we put the customer sat data into the system and measure the customer sat data against what they are telling us anonymously through the—it's not so anonymously, but it's through the system. and then also measure that against the subjective data to make sure that we're in a line so that we know what we think we know about the customer is what the customer is actually thinking. And so, you know, those I mentioned five general things about just kind of the tracking and how references can be pooled. But I have five additional things that are specific to the Magic Quadrant, which is probably the what most people are interested based on Jenny's introduction. So the first thing is we don't react to a request for references. We anticipate it. We know when every Magic Quadrant is going to come out because they generally come out at roughly the same time every year. And we start talking to the references well before that. And we ask them, can you be a reference? Are you a Gartner client? Can you be a spokesperson? And just to get that first that information out there, just to see if they will be a reference. And so there are we'll have a pool of 300 to 400 references, and then what we'll do is we'll map what the Gartner research, the individual analysts, what they say through SAS days, through inquiry, through briefings, what they say to us, and we pick up on them and we very specifically note the issues that an analyst may have with our offering, and then we'll map that against the success parts that are measured in the metrics against that, so that we can pick the references that are most suitable for whatever issue it is. So if it's a Gartner Magic Quadrant, for example, then we never share analyst reports with the references, but we do tell them about the goals of the analysts, the goals as we understand them. So specifically, we have inquiries with the analysts and say, well, what kind of references are you looking for? And what kind of things are you looking for? And then we'll look at the research, and we read every piece of research that's been published, and then we educate the references based on that information. Like, here's what they're looking for. Can you speak to that? So after a certain amount of time, we look at the number of references that are requested. We would typically double the number of references or try to go beyond the number of references that are requested and give more. And we will start to talk to the spokespeople who we already know and, known for a long time. And then we say, look, Gartner is not going to believe you unless you're fair and objective. So don't do this just to say the best things. Do this to be a reference. Do this to be a real reference. But here are the issues that we think Gartner has. And then as we talk to the people, we get a sense of what they're thinking. We build those references up, and our practice is to document, a page. We create a document that has one page, maybe 1 to 2 pages per reference, about the just basic information. Here's the name of the person. Here's where they can be reached. Here's what hours, what time zone they're in. Then we go into the background of the company because, most of them are probably Gartner clients, but some may not, especially because we can use small companies as references as well as large companies. And small companies may or may not have a relationship with Gartner, although everyone knows what Gartner, who Gartner is. They may not know the specific analyst or the style of the analyst. And then we would document that background, and then we talk specifically about when the customer went live, what system, if it was a competitive win, what system it was a replace or win over, how many licenses they purchased, when they started to be a customer, because many times the analyst will ask for brand new references, and sometimes they'll ask for, you know, changes in the references. For example, if a customer got many more seats, subscriptions to Salesforce, then, you know, we'll put that into the data. It's just bullet points for the analyst to go over, and we hope it helps the analyst just get a profile of the customer so they can ask better questions of the references themselves. And then we stay after that time where the customer agrees, and we hand it over to Gartner, the Gartner analyst, and the teams that are working on the Magic Quadrants. We do not talk to the references until either they communicate to us or something is published. And the reason for that is that, and we tell them up front that we want them to be objective, and we don't want to influence them to try to say something that is just not true. We want them to be truthful and honest in the references. And you know, that's basically our strategy for the practices. And the biggest takeaway is you know, for the references is, you know, besides what I said about, you know, keeping a reference, building a reference over time, just don't build a reference for a specific Magic Quadrant, because people talk all the time. But the main thing is to read the reports and know the analysts. So, you know, talk to the analysts at all times to know what issues they're trying to figure out. And then finally, map that information against what the analyst, map the information from the analyst against what the, you know, the customer is, through the metrics that we have, and then we would get in touch with the account executive, and then we'll set it up, and then hand the reference over. And I believe it's been very successful for Salesforce.com. I believe the practice can be improved at any times, but for now it seems to work well. I'll let the Gartner analysts decide that for themselves, but we're always going to iterate over this too. There's always more things we can do. So that's basically our best practices. And you know, anybody can talk to me specifically about you know, more detail as well. So with
John,
that,
great job. Yeah, thanks, John. Great job. I think a lot of great tactical tips. And what I love strategically, it sounds like you've put elements in place that actually foster sort of a culture of customer reference building, which you know, appears to be you know, a different approach, I think, than the, let's say, the average approach. So great stuff, and I'm sure there'll be lots of good questions when we get to Q&A. Thanks so much. Great job.
You're welcome. Thank you.
To tie the next topic, Michael Mose is going to share with us his best practices from the analyst perspective in around the topic of vendor briefings. And this was something that came through loud and clear in a lot of the interviews we did over the last, you know, few months. Knowing that there's a huge investment in time that many of you make in preparing for and delivering briefings to Gartner analysts, knowing how it's a critical phase of the evaluation process. And as Michael goes through his material, Michael, one thing I'd love you to comment on is the timing of reference checking and vendor briefings, you know, to sort of tie these two issues together. So take it away. Thanks.
Okay, and thanks very much, Jeff, and also to you, John Tashik, on Salesforce. Has been, excuse me, I've been speaking for the last 2 days straight. One, for me, a good example, they're very thoughtful and consistent and factual in the references, and the references also are almost 100% accessible and blunt, and that's what you're looking for. You're just looking for some honest dialogue with folks who've touched the technologies. On the vendor briefing side and on the reference checking, I'd go back to the first point that Jeff made and Jenny made. The point was that any day is a good day for a reference. The worst practice is to gang this all up around what you would consider to be the Magic Quadrant season. There is no Magic Quadrant season. I delivered two presentations yesterday on the Magic Quadrant process in two of my disciplines, and one of the things I emphasized is that this is nothing more than a very complex Excel spreadsheet, and we're always looking for input on the dimensions and their weightings. And if it's January, February, March, April, throughout the year, that makes it that much easier for us not only to produce a magic quadrant on its assigned date, which we always endeavor to hit. Say it's in April, it's going to come out in April. But more importantly, think of this as a living document. This is a document that in June, July, and August, when a client calls in, the analyst is always dynamically delivering that information correct to July, not correct to April. And if you decide that, well, we're not going to provide any references after February, March for that April MQ until next February and March, you're really missing the boat. You're missing the opportunity to stay fresh, to stay relevant in the analyst's mind. And that would be, I would say, the biggest best practice. Our best vendors are cognizant of the fact that we need that input on an ongoing basis, that touch with live customers on an ongoing basis and not just during the Magic Quadrant. Now, for the vendor briefing, what I generally tell clients is that who are vendors, suppliers of software services, is the right time is when you have an important delta, something that's changed that we need to know about. That could mean that you don't have a whole lot to say, and perhaps a vendor briefing is not the best use of your time. Maybe the inquiry process is. But if you have a new market strategy that we don't know about, or if you have a new product that is about to be launched that you want us to have specific information about, and of course, if you're a new company on the block, then the timing is going to be different. You don't also want to say, well, now it's a Magic Quadrant, we're going to do a vendor briefing. That might not be the best time. It's generally, as I said, when you have something of interest. Let me get some background. The most successful AR teams out there understand both the strategic and tactical approaches to the job. The strategic side is just understanding what we as analysts are trying to do, and that is simple. Analysts, we have our primary goal is offering technology advice to end-user organizations, which means that we have to match the expressed or the implied needs of the business or government agency or some other unit with a proper short list of technologies and business applications or services. But that's not the only job we have. Obviously, we're on the phone with you because we're also advisors and counsel to technology companies. And these companies want to grow. They want to find new markets. They want to develop new products and form partnerships. And for that, you're using our insight working with end-user organizations. And then finally, we're a sounding board, and we're a counsel to integrators. It could be venture capitalists and other investment companies. So we do have that threefold job there of the technology advice end users, advice and insight to you, and the folks who might be integrators or investors. With that as background, then, I'll give you some of the best practices that I see that the analysts are using with you folks. The first is don't arrange for a vendor briefing until you're sure that it's tightly orchestrated and can be impactful. Just remember, sell no wine before it's time. Have no briefing until you're ready. If you're in doubt, then listen to the different best practices that I'm going to give you and say, yeah, we meet all these criteria. We should go ahead. Because keep in mind, analysts are inundated with requests for briefings, and you need to use our time wisely and your timing wisely. What is it we want to see and hear during the briefing? Well, on a high level, I'd say that we're looking for the gap that the product or service that you're going to show us fills. Why do you need to exist in the first place? Why is the vendor's approach a better approach than the existing alternatives? And then, of course, we're going to see and want a demonstration that is proof points of that proposition, and we're hoping that it's going to be delivered by competent management. And throughout, I think the underlying tone should be stay calm and try to have some fun. I don't mean make it a party, but I also mean that you'll sometimes be peppered with questions, and tone, our tone is always one that's trying to be supportive, but also we all sometimes want to get you to the point maybe more quickly because you may be going off and we might try to snap you back into attention only for your, it's generally for your benefit. We really do want to understand what you're doing there. First thing we'd like to know is your management. We want to, if we don't know your management, we'd like to know them. We'd like to know their previous experience. Where do they come from? What's their selling experience? What's their marketing experience? What's their product development experience? That's a very critical area in our evaluation, for example, on a Magic Quadrant, is who's running this company, who's running this product line. We'd like to understand the management's vision for the product, their vision for industries, vision for the company overall, and not just today, but how they see that changing over, and you can pick your number of years, 2, 3, 4 years. Longer than that, it's not reasonable. Things change so rapidly, but we would like to see, where do you see this going? Don't spend too much time setting the highest level context for this product or service, please. If, for example, you're talking about, you have a product for cloud computing, don't start telling us cloud computing goes back to Iona software and object-oriented programming. You're going to hear us quickly step in and say, okay, that's great. Could we, and because what we're trying to do is have you quantify the value that you're bringing. You're going to say, this is what we're talking about. The product is going to, and we'll get onto that later, but our proposition is that we're going to have, you'll have shorter development times of 15% or 35% lower data center costs or 10% reduction in order errors or 40% lower cost of billing using our product or service. This is something that we're trying to be fact-based. We're trying to understand quickly. This is a new product or a variation, a bold departure from previous products, and the reason our clients should be interested are the following, again, fact-based types of things. Moving on, we also like to understand the size of the company. We want to know how many employees you have. We want to know how many people you have in the sales function, marketing function, development, professional services. We realize that for some of you, you have multiple product lines, but that means that we're going to want to drill down into that specific division. In my area, I look at customer relationship management, for example. I don't need to hear about your entire ERP practice or your mobile division, but I'd like to hear about that specific product set, because we want to come away with an understanding of that area and, if as relevant, the connections to other part of your organization. Next part beyond that is a description of the development resources for the product, the size, the location, the tools used in development. This is very critical to us to know. It may be a tremendous advantage that your development organization is in the Ukraine or in Bangalore. We'd like to know that. We'd like to, you might have new development tools that are a highlight, and they we think, oh, that's terrific. And on the other, the corollary to that is we also want to expose if you're using older generations of software. AR will arrange then for a technology overview, and that should describe the platforms, the tools, and the integration capabilities, and oftentimes to save yourselves time, and you should ask the analyst, and perhaps that part can be done if you can send that technology overview ahead of time so that we'll be in some ways informed. We won't always have the ability, and we'll tell you, that's why it should be with consent, to do this ahead of time is just to save time. And then a demonstration. The company should submit a product overview, use real-world examples, and then your future state. Here's a concrete example of the business. We want to know the current software release, the version, and in the demo, we want you to point out uniqueness. That's what you're there for. We don't want your whole product set end-to-end, but again, this is the gap in the market that we have found, and we're going to demonstrate that to you now. We can keep that to short 20%. Some data about you, about the division or about the product. Here's our revenue per year, per module, split between license and services, our partnerships, regional integrators, et cetera. And then customers, those who are new in the past 12 months. Don't bring out the retreads from 6 years ago. We don't care. We're interested in knowing the momentum, the differences by, again, industry, year, product, module. We also want contact names, email, telephone numbers. We want a short description of the installation for at least 3 businesses in 3 geographies. The reason we do that, we want to triangulate. We want to say, look, okay, this is all North America, or there's a good spread between AP and Latin America and some other area in North America. And how do you do it? Do you have an ecosystem of partners such as resellers, or do you have complementary software providers, integrators? And then I'd say the final point on that is, understand that what are you doing in this session It's not a strategy session where the vendor is asking us, the analysts, a lot of questions. Don't waste your time on that. This is your opportunity to put your best face forward and demonstrate your mastery of whatever it is that you're trying to show us. This is the vendor, in some ways, being scrutinized by the analyst to understand the business proposition for your company. If you follow those 10 steps, I can guarantee you that the vendor briefing process is going to go smoothly and it's going to be productive for the folks that you've got on the phone and for the analysts both, which is, I mean, it's going to mean also for our end users. So that's my piece of wisdom. I'm going to turn it back to you, Jeff.
Michael, great job. It's I can't imagine that anyone following, you know, the majority of those steps wouldn't, as you pointed out, really streamline their processes internally and I think take a lot of the friction out of preparing for the vendor briefing and really make it a very effective and I think productive session. Just fantastic job. Thank you very, very much. And I'm sure there'll be lots of questions in a couple of minutes here. Folks, we wanted to cover two other analyst relations related topics of interest to the community. First, I'm going to turn the mic over to Andy Rosenblatt, who is going to give you some heads up on some AR functionality changes. And this really reflects the interviews that we've done with folks that have said, hey, you know, Gartner, on the AR community ATCs, keep us posted on what's going on. You know, don't make it a commercial message, but just keep us posted, and Andy's going to give you a heads up on some of the changes that he's just worked on. Andy?
All right, thanks, Jeff. As Jeff alluded to, and as many of you are aware, over the last year we've introduced many new deliverables and tools for the analyst relations community. Many of you have provided feedback that have led to these enhancements, and many of you have asked for updates, again, as Jeff alluded to, on what tools and resources are available to you. So we plan to host another call to talk through the details of these improvements and to answer any questions that you might have. We wanted to make today's – we know we had a limited amount of time today, and we wanted to make it as valuable for you as possible. But I did want to take a minute to highlight a few of the items that we'll be covering on that call so that you have a sense of what the agenda will be. I like to think of the enhancements that were made to the product in three broad categories. The first category is unique insights, which includes things like the company dashboard as well as the customer analytics, customer insights and search analytics. And during this call, we'll focus primarily on the new wizards that were created around customer insights and search analytics. And these wizards were created based on feedback from many of you. So hopefully that will be of some interest. Second, we'll talk briefly about some of the new content that's available, things like SWOT reports, emerging market and emerging trend reports. And then finally, we'll demonstrate some of the productivity tools that we've introduced, things like the Analyst Relations Toolbox. We'll demonstrate a new tool that we'll be launching in the fourth quarter called the Analyst Fast Finder, which helps you navigate the analyst community. And we'll also be showing things like the improved analyst biographies, as well as things like company and market tear sheets. We'll focus the product update ATC on these enhancements through a live demonstration, so it'll be pretty interactive, and we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers and feedback. And we'll be sending out an invite to you all for this session before the end of this week. But for those that want to hold the time on their calendar, the call is scheduled for September 23rd at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Jeff, I'll hand it back over to you.
Great. Thanks, Andy. And another update topic, another heads-up topic, comes from Nancy Erskine on some upcoming changes in our quote policy. Nance?
Thanks, Jeff. And mine is truly going to be a heads-up here. Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. Very pleased to be asked to be part of this call. On September 15th, coming up pretty soon, we will be announcing an update to the copyright and quote policy. And we're doing this specifically to make it easier for clients who comply with our copyright and quote policy to actually quote our information more easily and quickly. So the benefit for HTTP clients will be for documents that are going to limited audiences, and that does not include, say, your website, we're going to make it easier, a lot easier, for you to quote Gartner without delay as long as you comply with the rules. And I'm not going to get a lot more specific than that right now because we're just not quite ready with that. Again, the 15th is when it will be announced. But, you know, we really listen to your frequent feedback about, geez, you know, sometimes it takes too long to get a quote through when I have a very limited audience and I have a very tight time frame. In fact, I can't quote Gartner because I can't get the turnaround I need. So we've really listened to that. And we're this is a first step toward making it increasingly easier for you to quote Gartner. The situations that this would apply to, again, limited exposure documents, not your website. And we'll, on the 15th, you'll see the specific situations to which that applies. So just in wrapping up, pretty simple comment here. Look for the announcement on the 15th. It will be on the vendor relations page on Gartner.com. You can get to it by clicking on the bottom of that page. It will also be mentioned in the AR newsletter, which will be coming out on the week of September 22nd. Also, just a reminder, please, when you do have requests for quotes, please submit them to vendor relations at Gartner.com. My team manages the policy, but that team processes all of your requests and provides the approval. So look for that on the 15th and be happy to talk to any of you individually about it after that point. Back to you, Jeff.
Great, Nance. Thanks so much. And what we'd love to do now is to move to our Q&A session. So Celeste, if you can open up the floor to our audience to fire away questions.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Carter Lesher.
Top of the morning, everybody. As always, a very useful call. A quick question. Michael mentioned that during his part that, you know, the magic quadrant is, in essence, a complex spreadsheet. Are you guys now consistently using spreadsheets to help capture information for the magic quadrant and then position the dots?
Hi, this is Jenny. I'll respond to that. Yeah, Carter, for about 2.5 years now, we have used a consistent spreadsheet. All analysts use the same tool to do their rating on the points of criteria that they use for the magic quadrant and then the plotting of that criteria.
Thank you.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of John Morgan.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks very much for the time. My question regards the premise that you guys established in the early part of the call where you were talking about the magic quadrant and the need for an analyst on some occasions to have to ask for a lot more references. And the reasoning that you gave us was they may be doing other primary-based research or they may have another set of research lined up. And that seems to me to be a second, almost nice-to-have objective, not really a primary objective for trying to gather references that AR teams will have to find for a magic quadrant. For a company to try to acquire 20 references because the analyst is trying to lead into maybe 3, 4, or half a dozen other research projects really complicates matters for an AR team that may have a lot of other projects with Gartner firms or with other firms that they're trying to do a good job on at the same time. So I'm very curious as to your comment as to whether it's reasonable for an AR team to push back and say, listen, is this really around a magic quadrant, or are you trying to line up references for research that you have planned for the entire year? So I'll shift it over to you guys.
Yeah, this is Jenny again. I'll be happy to respond to that. So let me just be a little bit more clear about that. When a an analyst asks for a large number of references, and I would say that's anything more than, let's say, really 5+, but let's say 10+, and they're going to do that extensive interview. They require that to be able to do the magic quadrant. My point in saying that they use it in other research is so that you understand that this is highly leveraged work. It's not just they've done it for a magic quadrant, they do the magic quadrant, and it's not used again. They'll be leveraging those interviews when they're publishing other pieces of research. Every time that they're talking to clients in the inquiry situation, they'll be leveraging that research when they're giving presentations throughout the year. So it's highly leveraged. That's the point I was trying to make. And then the other point that I would just say is that this is usually in areas that are very service-centric, so that the client experience is a really, really important part of your delivery.
Okay. So if I may just come back with another question or another observation, this would complicate things for teams, because when we qualify customers to be potential references, we would then have to tell them that, hey, there is a likelihood that Gartner may ask you, or as part of this interview, they may want to use the research from your interview in multiple other research projects through the course of the year. And that, quite frankly, may turn a number of customers off, because the AR outreach may have been pretty specific in that they're going to talk to you about an upcoming Magic Quadrant.
So I think that it's fair to say that whenever our analysts are talking to anyone, they are collecting information that they will be using in all of their research. So I'm not sure that that's valid. I mean, if we're talking to someone about a magic quadrant, an analyst uses that as part of their input to all of the research that they do in every case. We don't name names, obviously. We hold that information very confidential, but you know, anytime we interact with anyone in the marketplace, it's part of our research. So that's true of any time we do reference, is that we would leverage that information. I'm just saying that in those cases when we do extensive interview types of things, it is an important part of that analyst research process.
Okay. All right. I think it's fair then for AR professionals on this call then that in my case, for example, I'm going to have to do a better job setting expectations with potential reference clients to let them know this discussion is not simply going to be around a deliverable called a magic quadrant, but this interview that you will have with them, if you agree, is likely to be used and part of ongoing research that Gartner has.
Yes, but I think that's safe to say about any time we're interacting with anyone in the marketplace.
Okay, that I would tell you that some of your analysts don't position it that way.
Okay.
Good, thanks, John. Great question. And thanks, Jenny. Celeste, do we have other folks in the queue with questions?
No, sir, you have no further questions at this time.
Okay. I want to first thank our audience. Thank you so much, folks, for dialing in and participating in the call. We hope very, very much that this has been valuable for you. I want to thank our speakers, especially our guest speakers, John and Michael. And thank you guys very much for pulling yourselves away from, I know, a very busy conference schedule that you're participating in today. And to the rest of our speakers, Jenny, Nancy, Andy, thanks so much, guys, for your participation. And we'll look forward to catching up with you all on our next time together, which in wrapping, wanted to remind the audience that we're looking forward to seeing you all again in Orlando and Cannes, as well as in Sydney, at our AR forums that we're holding in those locations. And you'll see in the last chart in the deck a heads up on the agenda. We've got a very exciting agenda that based on your feedback, we have invited Gene Hall to address all of you as our AR professional clients. Peter Sondegaard, as always, a hit with all of you. Michael, you who heads up our high-tech and telecoms programs group, Gene, Peter, Michael will be prepared to share strategy, handle questions. As Jenny pointed out, we have an exciting panel that involves some of your peers around the topic, a deeper dive on Magic Quadrants to further some of the elements in this conversation we had here today. And so we're really looking forward to seeing all of you in Orlando. One thing that we'd encourage you to do, if you have specific questions, this is a great opportunity, that you would like to see either Gene, Peter, Michael, or Jenny guide the team to address in the panel, please send that along to arcommunity@gartner.com, and we'd be more than thrilled to inject that into the final planning stages for those presentations. So with that, thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing you in Orlando and Cannes and possibly Sydney. Thanks so much, everyone. Bye-bye.
This concludes today's quarterly analyst relations conference call. You may now disconnect.